Christian organization will develop immensely. And of course, these conspiracies are always plotted against us, and we will finally overcome them by God's grace. They fabricate an excuse every day. I always said that after the recent riots in Iran, we will see a sharp rise in the price of the dollar, because these unrests have economic effects, and the games they play would leave its effect on the economy. I believe we can be successful in non-oil exports. I say that we should increase our industrial power based on knowledge-based projects and ease taxes so that we can benefit from the resulting exports. When our exports are higher than our imports, our money will be stable. And this can be done easily, without a doubt. To some extent, the work orientation of our country has always been based on imports. Our business trades have been imports, and our exports were limited to some special goods. This is changing, and I am sure that this balance will become positive soon. And then our money will become stable and valuable, and it'll be able to interact with the countries of the world. This way, we can make investments in foreign countries and inside Iran.
Doctor, we have completely run out of time. Thank you so much for spending time with us, explaining these very interesting matters, very in detail and with expertise. Thank you for joining us on Insight. So what insight did we gain from our conversation with Dr. Safadi? It seems this new economic world order that we always speak about in the future tense should be spoken about in the present tense. The speed with which the old economic order is collapsing and the new order is taking shape is breathtaking at times, as is Iran's technological advancements, which are a significant element in the development of this new order. Iran has all the necessary elements to become an economic superpower, given its vast natural resources, with news of new discoveries being reported on a regular basis, as well as Iran's rapid and massive technological advancements, achieved under the severest of sanctions, but acknowledged as stunning by both friend and foe. The center of human economic life is shifting back to Asia, where it has been for the vast majority of human history. And Iran's economy is upgrading to a knowledge-based economy built on a strong foundation of vast energy and natural resources, allowing Iran to retake its historic place as one of the pillars of modern human civilization and the leading power of the most geostrategic region of the world, West Asia. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time, on Insight.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Experts say exposure to Chevron's climate-friendly fuel may pose severe risk of cancer. The risk is 250,000 times greater than the level considered acceptable by EPA division that approves new chemicals. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Throughout writing this regard, the Environmental Protection Agency recently gave a Chevron refinery the green light to create fuel from discarded plastics as part of a climate-friendly initiative to boost alternatives to petroleum. But according to agency records obtained by ProPublica and The Guardian, the production of one of the fuels could emit air pollution that is so toxic. One out of four people exposed to it over a lifetime could get cancer. That kind of risk is obscene, said Linda Birnbaum, former head of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, adding, "You can't let that get out. That risk is 250,000 times greater than the level usually considered acceptable by the EPA division that approves new chemicals." Chevron hasn't started making this jet fuel yet, the EPA said. When the company does, the cancer burden will disproportionately fall on people who have low incomes and are black because of the population that lives within 3 miles of the refinery in Pascagoula, Mississippi. ProPublica and The Guardian asked Maria Doa, a scientist who worked at the EPA for 30 years, to review the document laying out the risk. Doa, who once ran the division that managed the risks posed by chemicals, was so alarmed by the cancer threat that she initially assumed it was a typographical error. EPA should not allow these risks in Pascagoula or anywhere, said Doa, who now is the Senior Director of Chemical Policy at Environmental Defense Fund. In response to questions from ProPublica and The Guardian, an EPA spokesperson wrote that the agency's lifetime cancer risk calculation is a very conservative estimate with high uncertainty, meaning the government erred on the side of caution in calculating such a high risk. Under federal law, the EPA can't approve new chemicals with serious health or environmental risks unless it comes up with ways to minimize the dangers. And if the EPA is unsure, the law allows the agency to order lab testing that would clarify the potential health and environmental harms. In the case of these new plastic-based fuels, the agency didn't do either of those things. In approving the jet fuel, EPA didn't require any lab tests, air monitoring, or controls that would reduce the release of cancer-causing pollutants or people's exposure to them. Aside from the chemical that carries a 25% lifetime risk of cancer from smokestack emissions, another of the Chevron fuels ushered in through the program is expected to cause 1.2 cancers in 10,000 people, also far higher than the agency allows for the general population. The EPA division that screens new chemicals typically limits cancer risk from a single air pollution to one case of cancer in a million people. The agency also calculated that air pollution from one of the fuels is expected to cause 7.1 cancers in every 1,000 workers, more than 70 times the level EPA's new chemicals division usually considers acceptable for workers. In addition to the chemicals released through the creation of fuels from plastics, the people living near the Chevron refinery are exposed to an array of other cancer-causing pollutants. As ProPublica reported in 2021, in that series, which mapped excess cancer risk from lifetime exposure to air pollution across the U.S., the highest chance was one cancer in 53 people in Port Arthur, Texas. The one in four lifetime cancer risk from breathing the emissions from the Chevron jet fuel is higher even than the lifetime risk of lung cancer for current smokers. But OSHA has warned the public not to rely on its outdated chemical standards. The refinery rule calls for air monitoring only for one pollutant, benzene. The Clean Water Act does not address air pollution, and the new fuels are not regulated under the Clean Air Act, which applies to a specific list of pollutants. Nor can states monitor for the carcinogenic new fuels without knowing their names and chemical structures. In its written statement, Chevron said that plastics are an essential part of modern life and plastic waste should not end up in unintended places in the environment. We are taking steps to address plastic waste and support a circular economy in which post-use plastic is recycled, reused, or repurposed. But environmentalists say such claims are just greenwashing. Whatever you call it, the creation of fuel from plastic is in some ways worse for the climate than simply making it directly from fossil fuels. Over 99% of all plastic is derived from fossil fuels, including coal, oil, and gas. To produce fuel from plastics, additional fossil fuels are used to generate the heat that converts them into petrochemicals that can be used as fuel. Veena Singla, a senior scientist at NRDC, said it adds an extra step. They have to burn a lot of stuff to power the process that transforms the plastic. Less than 6% of plastic is recycled in US. Much of the rest, millions of tons of it, ends up in the oceans each year, killing marine mammals and polluting the world. Plastic does not fully decompose. Instead, it eventually breaks down into tiny bits, some of which wind up inside our bodies. As the public's awareness of the health and environmental harm grows, the plastics industry has found itself under increasing pressure to find a use for the waste. The idea of creating fuel from plastic offers the comforting sense that plastics are sustainable, but the release of cancer-causing pollution is just one of the several significant problems that have plagued attempts to convert discarded plastic into new things. One recent study by scientists from the Department of Energy found that the economic and environmental cost of turning old plastic into new using a process called pyrolysis were 10 to 100 times higher than those of making new plastics from fossil fuels. The lead author said similar issues plague the use of this process to create fuels from plastics. Chevron buys oil that another company extracts from discarded plastics through pyrolysis. Though the parts of the consent order that aren't blacked out don't mention that this oil came from waste plastics, a related EPA record makes this clear. The cancer risks come from the pollution emitted from Chevron's smokestacks when the company turns that oil into fuel.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed off on a new foreign policy strategy aimed at prioritizing the elimination of what it calls Western dominance in global politics. Addressing members of the Russian Security Council via video link, Putin said,
Cardinal changes in international life have forced us to seriously adjust key strategic planning documents, including the foreign policy concept of the Russian Federation, which outlines the principles, tasks, priorities of diplomatic activity.
The Russian leader explained that the key document had to be altered due to what he termed as drastic changes in the international landscape. The new foreign policy outlines how Russia could take, quote, symmetrical and asymmetric measures in response to unfriendly actions against it. The 42-page document says to build a multipolar world, Russia would create conditions to counter any new colonial and hegemonic ambitions. The document was presented by Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who in a televised address said Russia faces existential threats to its security.
The existential nature of threats to the security and development of our country driven by the actions of unfriendly states is recognized in Russia's new foreign policy.
Lavrov said the United States of America is directly named as the main initiator and conductor of anti-Russia sentiment, and in general, the policy of the West aimed at weakening Russia in every possible way is characterized as a hybrid war of a new kind. He said that anti-Russia measures include undermining its military, economic, and technological potentials, as well as aiming to limit its sovereignty in external and internal politics to erode its territorial integrity. Lavrov underlined that Moscow will no longer rely on the West for energy trade and instead will shift its business toward China and India. The top diplomat's comments came as Moscow has voiced its readiness to maintain its strategic parity and peaceful coexistence with the United States and establish a balance of interest between the two. Nevertheless, the new policy document has made it clear that the prospect of such relations largely depends on the U.S. abandoning its domineering stance and giving emphasis on interactions with Russia. Moscow says it expects Western powers to recognize the futility of confrontational policies and hegemonic ambitions and to eventually return to pragmatic cooperation with Russia. Russia has clearly stressed that mutual respect should be the basis for dialogue and cooperation. Russia's new strategy package has stressed the need for boosting cooperation with China and India. It calls for the deepening of ties and cooperation with friendly, sovereign, global centers of power and development located on the Eurasian continent. Moscow has already stepped up energy supplies to both China and India after being almost entirely cut off from its traditional European markets. However, Russia's new policy document can also be seen in light of Chinese President Xi Jinping's recent visit to Moscow. Undoubtedly, China and Russia share a common concern about the West that has been trying to isolate the two countries from East and West Asia, Europe to Africa under different pretexts. Russia has time and again warned the U.S.-led NATO against its eastward expansion, calling it an existential threat. Ironically, that was one of the reasons of Moscow's military offensive against Ukraine. In West Asia, the U.S. continues to maintain its presence by deploying troops to the countries like Iraq and Syria under the pretext of fighting terrorism. But its military adventurism is to instill fear among regional countries and to serve as a goal to encircle Russia. In East Asia, China has long accused the United States of trying to create what it calls Indo-Pacific NATO by signing a string of defense agreements from the Philippines to Australia. From the military buildup on the Korean Peninsula to providing military assistance to Taiwan by the U.S. and its allies, it seems that Putin's argument about the West's attempt to create a global axis is closer to reality. Instances like China brokered diplomatic rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia, as well as Russia move to stop the West's expansionism, are enough to suggest the need of a multipolar world order. This is something countries were deprived of due to the U.S. intentions to make a unipolar world to pursue its own agenda. But a change is taking place given that many countries like Russia, China, and India have proved themselves to be able to shift the global order.
Donald Trump has become the first former United States president to be charged with a crime. A grand jury in New York has indicted Trump after a years-long probe into his alleged role in covering up a hush money payment to an adult entertainer ahead of the 2016 presidential election. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, an indictment is the process when a person receives a formal notice that it is believed that they committed a crime and informs the person of the charges against them. It takes place after a grand jury examines all potential evidence to decide whether a crime was committed. If the jury decides there is enough evidence, an indictment will come. In this case, the grand jury in New York City, which has been meeting since January, indicted Trump after hearing testimony from a number of witnesses. The specific charges are not yet known, as the indictment remains under seal. Trump is expected to be arraigned on Tuesday. After months of hearing evidence concerning a $130,000 payment to adult entertainer Stormy Daniels before the 2016 presidential campaign, the grand jury voted to charge Trump. The money was reportedly meant to buy her silence about the encounter she says they had years before. Trump's former personal lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, has said he coordinated with Trump on the payments to Daniels and to a second woman, Karen Dougal. The former president has denied the affair and any wrongdoing. He said the payment was to protect his reputation from a false accusation. While the particular allegations were not disclosed, multiple U.S. media sites speculated prior to Thursday's indictment that the probable charges pertained to Trump's reimbursement of Cohen, with prosecutors charging that he falsely labeled the payments as legal expenditures. The accusation, which is ordinarily a misdemeanor, could be elevated to a felony if prosecutors link the payment to violations of election law, which limits individual payments to political candidates to $2,700 and requires them to be made public. The payment to Daniels right before the 2016 vote could be considered an illegal campaign contribution. Trump also faces felony investigations related to the 2020 election and over the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol by his supporters. Trump has rejected Daniels' claim, and his lawyer has accused her of extortion. Calling himself a completely innocent person, Trump described the indictment as the latest in a series of steps aimed at destroying his Make America Great Again movement. The former president also accused the Democrats who conducted the probe, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, of trying to hurt his electoral chances. Trump has denied any wrongdoing, describing the measure as political persecution and election interference at the highest level in history. A judge is anticipated to unseal the Manhattan charges in the coming days, and Trump will be required to turn himself in to authorities. He will then appear in front of a judge and be formally charged, after which a decision will be made as to whether he should be freed on bond or taken into custody. Legal experts say that any potential trial is still at least more than a year away, raising the possibility that the former U.S. president could face a jury in a Manhattan courtroom during or even after the 2024 presidential campaign as he seeks a return to the White House. After his indictment, Trump's supporters gathered outside his Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago property in Florida to show their support for the former president.
It's totally, you've heard a witch hunt. It's not going to stop here. We've got to continue fighting for Trump because they're going to continue going after Trump because they know he can beat any Democrat they put out there. So they're going to play dirty. They're going to do all the games they can play to get rid of Trump.
Meanwhile, Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is thought to be strongly considering a 2024 presidential run, called the indictment an un-American move. In a tweet, he said the weaponization of the legal system to advance a political agenda turns the rule of law on its head. He also said Florida will not assist in an extradition request. In reaction to the indictment, Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence said in an interview that the indictment is an outrage.
Well, I think the unprecedented indictment of a former president of the United States on a campaign finance issue is an outrage. And it appears to millions of Americans to be nothing more than a political prosecution that's driven by a prosecutor who literally ran for office on a pledge to indict the former president.
Also, Trump's former United Nations ambassador and candidate for the Republican nomination, Nikki Haley, said in an interview that the indictment was more a political move than a search for justice.
You know, from everything I've seen from this New York district attorney is that this would be something he'd be doing for political points. And I think what we know is when you get into political prosecutions like this, it's more about revenge than it is about justice. And, you know, I think the country would be better off talking about things that the American public cares about than to sit there and have to deal with some revenge by some political people in New York.
Political analysts say that the indictment would put Trump in the spotlight once more and could potentially boost his election chances by focusing all the public attention back on the former president. They say Trump will try to turn his indictment to his advantage by stoking anger among core supporters over what they see as the weaponization of the justice system. Hundreds of thousands of people across France took part in protests and strikes to voice their discontent with Emmanuel Macron's use of constitutional executive powers to push through an unpopular raise of the pension age. Dubbed the Day of Action by French trade unions, Tuesday's protest was the 10th such mobilization since industrial action started in mid-January against the proposed reform, which includes raising retirement age from 62 to 64. A record number of security forces were also deployed across France amid fears of protests turning violent.
Faced with this situation, I have decided to deploy an unprecedented security force of 13,000 police officers and gendarmes, including 5,500 in Paris. 90 units of mobile forces will be deployed, a level of mobilization like never before.
As protesters staged generally peaceful marches across the country, violent clashes broke out in some areas, with security forces using indiscriminate force, including tear gas cannons and water cannons to suppress protesters calling for Macron's ouster. The crisis has intensified due to controversy over policing tactics, with lawyers complaining about arbitrary arrests, injuries, and extreme use of force, fearing crowd control. Over 30 lawyers wrote an open letter to Le Monde on Monday, stating their great concern about what they called arbitrary arrests of hundreds of people. They accused the police of using the judicial system and arrests as a tactic to put people off protesting. Also on Saturday, Europe's leading human rights watchdog accused the French police of using excessive force against protesters. It said people angry at Macron's pension law had the right to protest peacefully and should have been protected from police brutality. Current protests are the most serious challenge to Macron since the Yellow Vest revolt 4 years ago. Polls show two-thirds of French people are against Macron's pension reform and the decision to push it through without a parliamentary vote. Union leaders called on the government to suspend the controversial pension bill, suggesting the use of outside mediators to reach a consensus and end the chaotic situation in the country. But the government turned down the idea, saying the cabinet is willing to discuss other policy changes, but not to review the pension bill.
They refuse mediation with us. They refuse to discuss pensions. And you want me to tell you what the compromise would be? There is no compromise for the moment. The compromise is that the government doesn't even want to discuss pensions with us, while for the 10th time we have a day of mobilization, which is extremely well attended.
We have a government which has decided not to listen to the voice of society and decided to ignore the problems of the French people. So we said to ourselves, what is our future in a society like this, with a government that despises the voice of the young people?
Nearly 2 weeks after Macron forced a new pension law through parliament using a special provision, unions have vowed no let-up in mass protests to get the government to back down.
We are going to continue the mobilizations. Today we are fighting for it to be really withdrawn, for this reform to be withdrawn. So if we can't go towards a pause and towards a mediation to discuss this reform again, we will continue the mobilizations and we will wait for the Constitutional Council to give us reason.
Public frustration at the French president's reform plans have evolved into broader anti-Macron sentiment.
We still see today in the polls that the French remain determined and are very largely in the majority. And it's Emmanuel Macron today who is losing popularity and not the social movement.
The protest movement against the pension reform has turned into the biggest domestic crisis of Macron's second mandate, with his approval rating at just 30%. Macron says the bill will come into force by the end of the year, arguing that the changes are necessary to prevent the pension system from collapse. But opponents say the overhaul is extremely unfair.
Millions of people across Germany have faced transport disruption in a cost-of-living mega-strike. Airports and bus and train stations across Germany were at a standstill. The strikes and walkouts caused disruption for millions of people during one of the largest walkouts in decades in Europe's biggest economy. The 24-hour warning strikes were called by the Verdi Union and Railway and Transport Union, IFOG. More than 400,000 transport workers have taken part in the industrial action. Flights at 8 major airports, including those in Munich, Frankfurt and Hamburg, were affected by the strikes. The German Airports Association said that around 380,000 travelers will not be able to take off on Monday.
Well, if I had known it, I wouldn't have come here and tried. I'm a bit shocked, actually. I didn't hear of it.
Long-distance railroad services were also suspended across Germany. Hamburg, which is Germany's largest port, was also hit by the walkouts. Employers have offered 5% more wages over a period of 27 months and a one-off payment of 2,500 euros. Unions are demanding a double-digit rise and have called the proposals unacceptable amid inflation, which reached 9.3% in February. Verdi has demanded a 10.5% pay raise for its members, citing rising energy and food costs. The strikes in Germany are part of major industrial actions, which have hit major European economies, as higher food and energy prices have dented living standards.
We are on strike today because inflation is just hitting us so hard. We have been losing wages in real terms for 2 years. We can no longer afford our lives. The heating costs are extreme. The gasoline is extreme. We have to think every time we go shopping. Do we take this with us or not? We need the money to finance our lives, and that's why we are here.
Strikes are never positive because they paralyze the economy in the tourist sense of the word. Nothing moves anymore. We also have to say that the wage demands may certainly be attractive for the strikers. But one thing must not be ignored. These prices will be passed on. The companies and the state will pass on the wage increases in the form of fees and higher prices. That means that inflation with these effects will certainly remain high. That is part of the truth.
For years, Germany was heavily dependent on Russia for its gas. It has now been particularly hit by higher prices, with inflation rates exceeding the euro area average in recent months. The walkout is the biggest in Germany since 1992. Persistent cost pressures have pushed central banks across Europe to a series of interest rate increases. However, Germany is not the only country to deal with massive strikes. In the UK, the government is engaged in pay disputes across several sectors, as workers demand higher wages to keep pace with surging inflation, with strikes in schools, on railways, and in hospitals taking place on a regular basis.
But there is still what's called, as you know, core inflation, which is driven by underlying demand in the economy, things like pay settlements. That's more than 6%, which I think is going to be harder to bring down. So I think there is absolutely no room for complacency, and we need to really keep our eyes on the target. Well, I don't believe they are overreacting. I think there is still inflationary pressure in the economy. I am very concerned about it, and I think we need to keep our eye on the ball. Only a week ago, we found that inflation had actually gone up from 10.1 to 10.4%. Mm-hmm. And I think that demonstrates there can be absolutely no room for complacency.
More than 1,400 security guards at Heathrow, the UK's busiest airport, are going on a strike over the Easter holidays. The strike action will force British Airways to cancel around 32 Heathrow Airport flights per day during the Easter holidays. Annual inflation in UK shops surged to its highest in at least 18 years in March. The British retail consortium food costs alone surged 15% from a year ago. And in France, it has witnessed days of strikes and protests over the controversial pension reforms. People are angry over the overhaul, which includes raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Protests erupted after President Emmanuel Macron, almost 2 weeks ago, pushed the new pension law through Parliament using a special provision, sidestepping any vote. Unions have vowed no let-up in mass protests to get the government to back down. The World Bank has warned overlapping crises could lead to a sharp slowdown across the globe. Analysts have warned that things could get worse, with steeper declines in potential growth if a global financial crisis or recession occurs.
For me, the banking problem is only the effect, not the cause of the problem. Our problem in this financial world is dramatic over-indebtedness. And the states would all like the banks to take these government securities into their own custody. But when interest rates are raised dramatically, the securities are worth less because the prices also fall. You have to watch out for that. So the states should finally learn to make fewer debts. Otherwise, we will have an unsustainable problem in the long term.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to turn himself in and appear in a court of law on Tuesday, 4th of April. Specific charges have not been made public. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. U.S. newspaper The Washington Post has covered this story and tells us more. A Manhattan grand jury has voted to indict former President Donald Trump, making him the first person in U.S. history to serve as commander-in-chief and then be charged with a crime, and setting the stage for a 2024 presidential contest unlike any other. The indictment was sealed, which means the specific charge or charges are not publicly known. But the grand jury has been hearing evidence about money paid to film actress Stormy Daniels during Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign, allegedly to keep her from saying she had an affair with Trump years earlier. Donald Trump is expected to turn himself in and appear in court on Tuesday, 4th of April, at 2:15 p.m. local time, said a person familiar with the matter. Trump, who is campaigning to return to the White House in 2024 and leading in most polls of Republican voters, is also the focus of criminal probes in Georgia and in Washington, D.C., related to his efforts to overturn Joe Biden's 2020 election victory and his handling of classified material at Mar-a-Lago, his Florida home and private club. Those cases have raised serious questions about national security and the basic functions of democracy. The New York case, in contrast, stems from a hush money plan and Trump's alleged conduct before he became president. The indictment follows weeks of speculation about whether and when Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg might take such a momentous step towards a courthouse showdown with one of the most combative politicians in modern U.S. history. Being charged with or found guilty of a crime does not disqualify Donald Trump from running for office. Still, the indictment suggests a remarkable possibility. A soon-to-be 77-year-old running for president while simultaneously seeking to beat a conviction. Donald Trump has denied any wrongdoing and says he did not have an affair with Stormy Daniels. A spokesperson for the Manhattan District Attorney said on Thursday evening, 30th of March, that the office had contacted Trump's attorney to coordinate his surrender for arraignment on an indictment which remains under seal. Alvin Bragg and his investigative team have spent months probing whether Trump falsified business records connected to the Daniels payments in a way that could constitute a campaign finance violation, a set of facts and allegations that some lawyers called a zombie case because it has lingered, seemingly lifeless but not actually dead, for years. Trump, who has long railed against law enforcement officials, particularly when it comes to investigation of his conduct, quickly issued a statement condemning the indictment. Democrats, he charged, have lied, cheated and stolen in their obsession with trying to get Trump. But now they've done the unthinkable, indicting a completely innocent person in an act of blatant election interference. Never before in our nation's history has this been done. The indictment was filed behind closed doors at the Lower Manhattan courthouse after the clerk's office was closed for the day. It was not immediately clear whether it will be unsealed before Donald Trump appears in court. Trump, like any criminal defendant, is expected to be processed before his arraignment, including fingerprinting and mugshots. Security will be a concern given that he has a significant Secret Service detail as a former president, a novel issue in a historic case. The special agent in charge of Trump's security detail, Sean Curran, or Curran's deputy, is likely to personally accompany Donald Trump when he is processed. Trump was at Mar-a-Lago on Thursday afternoon, 30th of March, when his lawyers said he had been indicted. His legal team was surprised by the precise timing, according to people familiar with the matter. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump has been indicted by a Manhattan grand jury, a historic reckoning after years of investigations into his personal, political and business dealings and an abrupt jolt to his bid to retake the White House. The exact nature of the charges was unclear on Friday because the indictment remained under seal, but they stem from payments made during the 2016 presidential campaign to silence claims of an extramarital affair. Prosecutors said they were working to coordinate Trump's surrender, which could happen early next week. They did not say whether they intend to seek prison time in the event of a conviction, a development that wouldn't prevent Donald Trump from seeking and assuming the presidency. The indictment, the first against the former U.S. president, injects a local district attorney's office into the heart of a national presidential race and ushers in criminal proceedings in a city that the ex-president for decades called home. Arriving at a time of deep political divisions, the charges are likely to reinforce rather than reshape dueling perspectives of those who see accountability as long overdue and those who, like Donald Trump, feel the Republican is being targeted for political purposes by a Democratic prosecutor. Donald Trump, who has denied any wrongdoing and has repeatedly assailed the investigation, called the indictment political persecution and predicted it would damage Democrats in 2024. In a statement confirming the charges, defense lawyers Susan Neschels and Joseph Tacopina said Trump did not commit any crime. We will vigorously fight this political prosecution in court. A spokesman for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office confirmed the indictment and said prosecutors had reached out to Donald Trump's defense team to coordinate a surrender. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story. Donald Trump has told advisers and associates in recent days that he's prepared to escalate attacks against the Manhattan prosecutor who resurrected the criminal prosecution into his hush money payments to film actress Stormy Daniels in 2016, now that a grand jury has indicted him. The former president has vowed to people close to him that he wants to go on the offensive and, in a private moment over the weekend at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida that demonstrates his gathering resolve, remarked using more colourful language that it was time to politically rough him up. Donald Trump has already signalled that he would go after the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg weeks before the grand jury handed up an indictment against him on Thursday, 30th of March, saying in pugilistic posts on Truth Social that the prosecution was purely political and accusing Alvin Bragg of being a psychopath. But the latest charge language reflects Trump's determination to double down on those attacks as he returns to his time-tested playbook of brawling with prosecutors, especially when faced with legal trouble that he knows he cannot avoid, people close to him have said. The episode at Mar-a-Lago came on the sidelines of strategy meetings Trump had with advisers and associates about how to respond to the indictment from a legal and a political standpoint, sessions which were described by two sources close to the former president. The case centres on $130,000 that Donald Trump paid to Stormy Daniels through his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, in the final days of the 2016 presidential campaign. Trump later reimbursed Michael Cohen with $35,000 checks, which were recorded as legal expenses. Michael Cohen pleaded guilty in 2018 to federal tax evasion and campaign finance violation charges. With the indictment under seal until Trump's scheduled arraignment on Tuesday, 4th of April, the exact charges remained unclear on Sunday, though they are expected to include falsification of business records and additional charges that elevate what would otherwise be a misdemeanor or a felony. Trump was initially caught off guard by the indictment and spent the following 24 hours absorbing the news that was relayed to him by several of his top advisers. Later, at one point, Trump repeated to himself almost incredulously that prosecutors had actually charged him. The shock had dissipated by the weekend, though, when Trump's tone changed and he told his team that he wanted to attack the case and fight the prosecutors.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Imam Ridha alayhi salam's shrine on the occasion of the beginning of the Iranian New Year 1402, that's March 21st, 2023. The arrogance wants a government in Iran which it can threaten or bribe and use threats and bribes to fulfill its wishes. Loot the country and gain political and economic dominance. This is what they are seeking. This is the kind of change that the enemy speaks of. This is the transformation that the enemies of the Islamic Republic are conceiving. Now, the transformation that I am speaking of is completely different from the transformation that is repeated by the enemies. What I mean by the word transformation is a change in certain weak sections and points, both in the Islamic system and in the Iranian society. We have flaws, we have weak sectors and certain weaknesses. We must identify these weaknesses, we must identify these points, and with full determination, which I will talk about because it is not an easy task, we must eliminate the weaknesses and turn them into strengths, some examples of which I will share with you later. Of course, this is a difficult task. It requires national self-confidence. If a nation believes in its own talents and capabilities, it will be able to take transformational actions. A self-confident nation can complete transformational actions as well. The officials of this nation will have the courage to talk about and make transformations. Thank God our nation has self-confidence. Our nation is a self-respecting, self-confident, independent and brave nation, examples of which you have all seen, and I will share a few examples of this later. Our nation has shown on different occasions that it trusts itself and its own capabilities. The first thing we need in order for transformation to take place is national self-confidence. That is the first thing.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The second thing we need is vigilance. If we fail to be vigilant, if we are heedless, we might damage our strengths in the name of transformation. We see this sometimes. Some people care about the Islamic system. They like the Islamic system and the revolution, yet sometimes they are heedless. They become careless and damage our strengths when they attempt to do something good and reform something. We must make sure we don't damage our strengths. So keep this point in mind. If we want to prevent any harm to our strengths, we need to recognize them. What are the strengths of our society? We must correctly identify them, focus on them, and understand them.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years.
choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Large field kitchen has become a usual scene in Ramadan every year since the war started in Syria. An NGO named Saad has been cooking warm meals for the needy in the fasting month for over a decade now. This year, they have expanded their massive kitchens in four Syrian cities, making over 20,000 meals for free.
This is our 11th year. This year is different from all previous ones as we face earthquakes in Aleppo. Our kitchens were established directly at that time, even before Ramadan. People's needs are doubling this year. People depend on us now every year. About 20,000 meals are produced daily.
The organization depends on donations, both cash and food supplements. Volunteers arrive early in the day to prepare, plan, and cook a specific meal to be distributed before sunset. Zahra says every capable Syrian should shoulder some responsibility to help others during this crisis.
I feel related to this initiative in Ramadan every year. I can't imagine myself not helping during this month. It feels incredibly good to know I'm helping in feeding thousands of people. It's a responsibility and an expression of love to my people.
We start working every day at 9 a.m. We prepare the ingredients of the meal, such as meat, rice, and vegetables. We produce the meals, wrap them, and distribute them to the needy, mainly in poor areas and earthquake affected parts of Syria.
The recent earthquakes exacerbated the already tough economic conditions in Syria. The UN says 70% of the population needs humanitarian assistance, while 6.8 million people have been internally displaced. Syrians have endured almost all factors that could bring a person to the brink of poverty, from foreign-backed war and terrorism to U.S. and Western economic sanctions and the recent devastating earthquakes. In this unprecedented scenario, such initiatives are sometimes life-saving for the poor and constitute a message of unity among Syrians. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Top NGOs gathered in the United States for a peace summit with the stated goal of fighting the war machine. The forum sought to empower and organize activists to stop U.S.-backed wars in Palestine, Yemen, Ukraine, and elsewhere, but they know that cultural resistance to peace appears deep.
We in the U.S. are so ingrained that domination of the world is our right, and, you know, being a nation founded on genocide, founded on slavery and those types of things, domination is just kind of in the air. And it seems normal, but it's really not normal.
Last month marked the 20th anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. The war is widely considered a disaster, even within the United States. And yet Washington's foreign policy remains just as belligerent. In 2002, polls showed that 67% of Americans disapproved of taking military action against Iraq. But then-Senator Joe Biden led the Democratic Party's bipartisan effort to invade. As president, Biden has stifled peace efforts, sent massive amounts of arms, and created a new quagmire, this time in Ukraine.
Well, we don't really have democracy. We have a state that calls itself a democracy. Biden just had a democracy summit, but we have a rigged system. We're allowed to vote, but that process is in itself corrupt. It gives the impression that we have input when we do not. The people don't have representation in this country. Defense contractors do, real estate developers do, big pharma does, but the people do not.
However, we're a long way from 2002. Many speakers noted the newfound inability of Washington to act unilaterally, which many around the world view as a positive.
And now you have other countries around the world. You have China